FCO, entity 0212, comm check.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast. The track you were listening to is Mess Around, the hit single off of the album Apophenia by Big Jaw. With us on the show today, we have lead singer and guitarist for Big Jaw, Clint Roth. Clint, how are you doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
Dude, I am great. Number one, may I just say what a joy it is to work with you every time I see you on site. Just so y'all know, everybody, little bit of behind the scenes inside baseball action. I actually work with Clint with ATX Event Systems and a couple other companies here in the Austin area doing corporate AV, things like that. But Clint's real passion is his rock and roll, his music. Since I've known him over the last few years, that's what we always end up talking about somewhere along the line.
Is
gear, toys, things like that, and especially Big Jaw. I love your sound, and the album Apophenia is great. I guess it's really more of an EP than an album necessarily.
But thanks, man. Thank you.
The sound of it is absolutely phenomenal. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because you are one of the many, many self-produced bands that I know. And so many people are looking for this kind of sound. So many people are looking for like that huge production sound. And it's hard to get without dumping a whole lot of money if you don't have like the skills in which to do it and the realm of knowledge that it takes to get something like that done on a budget. Tell us a little bit about how Big Jaw came to be, how you came into the music scene and kind of came up, and the creation of Apophenia.
Well, first, man, let me say thank you.
For You're
very
welcome.
Generous for calling a Mess Around a hit single. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, anything that has the accolades of being on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 commercials, including NASCAR,
well, that's
Chevy.
Oh, that's misleading. That song's not in all those commercials.
Oh, yeah? your website is misleading?
No. Well, I see, okay, yeah, I see how you can see that now.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
written music for all those
Oh, okay.
commercials.
Yeah, but still, but, I mean, just the fact that your band, your music has those accolades in and of itself is pretty up there. That's all right. That's all right. Because it is something whenever you get your music to that level, whenever you get it, just the sound of production to that level, that those are the things that start happening. Those doors suddenly become open.
Well, it's funny, man, because that stuff came before the band.
Oh wow!
Like all the me writing for commercials came before Big Jaw even
well,
started.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. How did you find your way into that market to begin with?
It's all luck, and it is like, you know, the thing that people say, it's all who you know, is like is 100% true.
Sure.
I don't know anybody. I know Chris Jordan.
Okay.
But
I know a couple hundred people.
I have a friend. Yeah. My friend Adam Aronson, who played drums on my first EP, Appetite for Construction. He played drums on the second one, Photophobia, and he played on Mess Around on the new one. I met him when I lived in San Francisco. I was when I was just getting started working in studios. He had a band called Magnify It, and that's where I met him when he was in the studio that I was working at.
Okay,
doing his record, and we became friends and have stayed friends ever since. And we both moved to LA about the same time. And he was in a band called The High Speed Scene. Still, they were an amazing band. And I guess one of those bands, it's like that lesson Like, it doesn't matter how amazing you are. Like, if it just the stars don't align.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they, you should check them out right now. I don't think they're on Spotify or anything, but you can find their music out there. The High Speed Scene. Amazing band. I love their sound.
Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up. Earlier today, my wife and I were out driving around with the kid, just kind of getting him tired for a nap. And we started talking about the modern digital revolution. And she was of the mind that it's actually wash, rinse, repeat of what it has been. And I was like, I don't know. I see bands like you out there. I really think that musically, artistically, video-wise, the world of digital media has truly blown the doors off for individuals. Because like you were saying before that, it's who you knew.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, like you, is.
It's, yeah, sure, yeah. Sure. It's always going to be who you know. That'll always help you get to the top. But at the same time, things like YouTube allow people, like, and you'll probably use your long arm and reach across and slap me right now, but it gives people like Justin Bieber the chance.
Oh, yeah,
Who are actually talented. Like, he was found on a YouTube video just, like, singing in the middle of a mall.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are avenues now. You're right.
Yeah.
Where it's not, you know, you can...
It's not necessarily up to an AR man.
He was a big talent.
Sure. So
that's, like, one of those things where it's undeniable.
Yeah.
If you like him or not...
Yeah, say what you want.
A big talent and, you know... He doesn't need to know anybody.
No,
Just be on the internet and people will find him. That's There's that too, and that's a whole other phenomenon. There are a handful of people that have that, like, that level of talent that no matter what they do, it's gonna be it's gonna be huge.
Yeah,
we're talking about, you know, little guys like me. You gotta know somebody.
Well, yeah, and you do have to know somebody. It helps. It helps to be in with A&R people. But that, kind of stuff.
Adam. How we got into writing music for commercials, he met somebody at a party in LA and they got to talking about his band, the High Speed Scene, and, oh, I know that band. I saw you guys. You're great. And they asked, he misunderstood. She was asking him to have the High Speed Scene write a song for this commercial, for a demo. And he took it as, oh, this is an opportunity for me to write a song for this commercial. And he asked me to help him. And so we turned it in, and it wasn't the High Speed Scene. It was just me and Adam. But they really liked it. So, like, okay. So then that turned into, like...
So next time you and this guy are going to do this project, right?
Yeah. So it's like, okay, that's not what we wanted, but it's good.
Yeah.
So that's how we got in. We started getting calls and started writing music for commercials. And it was me and Adam writing together.
Yeah. And it's amazing how it really is, like you said, stars aligned, being in the right place, the right time, and knowing someone.
Yeah.
It always surprises me. I love asking people their story because it so frequently that is the story. That they'd been plugging away on one project, and this one just kind of popped up.
Yeah. It's, you meet somebody at a party. You run it. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
That's how you get things done. That's how you make connections and move forward. Is, you can do what I do, which is sit by myself in my house and, like, write music and don't talk to anybody.
Sure.
And you and me and my mom will hear the music.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, you got to get out and meet people and look for opportunities like this. Like, since we talked about Big Joe, and here we are talking about it on your podcast.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like I told you the other day when we were on show site in D.C., like, hey, come over. Come be on the show. Like, worst that's going to happen is you have something for your media kit.
Yeah, no, this is great.
You know?
Thank you for having me.
And it surprises me, though, that, like, with my other podcast, Dudes and Beer, I've had, like, international speakers on my show, like, whistleblowers, all kinds of stuff, because they're literally of the mind, like, hey, man, if you got a dedicated listenership of, like, 1,000 people, that's 1,000 people that haven't heard about my book.
Oh, yeah.
That's 1,000 people that haven't heard my speech, Chris, on a TED Talks.
If you had zero listeners and you invited me to come over and talk to you in your living room about Big Jaw, I would be here.
Yes, you would. because properly, you are a shameless self-promoter of a musician.
I'm trying to be. And I'm working at it.
That's truly what it takes.
Yeah.
It really is that go-get-em attitude, the self-promotion aspect. And it's like I was explaining to my wife in the car today, it's an unfortunate situation when you're in a band, especially a large band, anything exceeding three pieces.
Yeah.
Like just in physics of itself, like the triangle is the most stable of everything. There's a reason for that. once you get into the alchemy of four, five, six people in a band, now you're talking about like more horses hitched to the cart.
Yeah.
And when that one horse goes like, oh, what's that? That slows the horse behind him down.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, and now suddenly, like, all the horses aren't pulling equally to the same goal.
Yeah, streamlining,
and
for
it,
sure.
You know, it really does take that concept of, like, for every 1 hour you spend in rehearsal, you spend 3 hours out promoting. Things like that. There are just these tiny little equations that when you work the formula will work.
But that's the other thing. Okay, so if you did have a band with five, six, seven, eight people, that's six or seven more people that could be out there spreading the word
in
exponentially.
Theory. Yes.
They wouldn't.
In beautiful,
it,
beautiful, awesome theory.
In
yes.
awesome theory, you'd have nine people out there. I would love to have a nine-piece band.
Wouldn't
How
you?
Fun would that be?
Dude.
Until you get into the logistics of scheduling rehearsals and all that stuff.
I could completely hear like a ska horn section behind what you guys are doing. Completely. Yeah. That would be epic sounding. But it's also one of those as an engineer and someone that booked bands, whenever I heard stuff like, dude, listen to that awesome ska horn section, like, I'd bring them in for a ska show one night, and then it was like, oh, yeah, you know, we had those guys in the studio.
Yeah.
It was like, what the hell? Yeah. You know, so the fact that what you're doing and what is on the CD is what you can perform live and what you can pull off live.
Mostly, yeah.
I mean, at least the stuff that I heard online before you brought the CD.
There are little bits in there that we're, you know, that we can't do. There's
sure.
like some keyboard parts and things like that. But
my
kind of thinking is like the first record that I did was just like I didn't have performing. I had performing in mind a little bit, but I had never really performed, so I didn't know what that meant.
Sure.
But my thought was like I'm going to try to write a record that a band could play. I pretty much did it piece by piece by myself, and then Adam played the drums. Mm. But then once I started getting a band right about the time of Fort Fun, so Photophobia is when I got my first live band together, which is Photophobia is the second EP, and that's the first one I did here in Austin. About Fort Fun time, I went into it thinking, okay, now I have this band, and we have all these parts, and I have to kind of rearrange how these songs are to play them live with the number of guys that I have. Let me go into this record thinking that I'm gonna write a record for a four-piece band.
Okay.
And that lasted about 3 days. I get into like, nope, I don't want to do that. I want to do, that's what I love about making records, is I want to do whatever I want to do.
Mm.
It's like, you know, if you, like a novelist, I feel like that would be fun to write a novel just so you could just make whatever world you want to make. And that's kind of how I felt about making records. I went in like, I'm going to make a record that's simple enough for a band to play. Nothing we can leave out. We'll play it exactly like the record.
Yeah.
I just want to do whatever I want to do on this record, and I'll figure it out the live part later.
Well, and that brings us to a very interesting turning point in this conversation, which is production.
Yeah.
Myself, whenever I would be asked by bands that I ran live sound for on the regs to like, hey, will you come be our sound guy? I would have a sit down beer conversation of, hey, you know, you understand this means I'm stepping into the role of producer now.
Right.
That means I will be coming to rehearsal. That means that we won't be getting drunk at rehearsal. We can get drunk after. We can have fellowship and get drunk and do whatever after, but rehearsal is rehearsal, and we're going to do it like we do on stage, which means we aren't going to have a 12-pack before we get up on stage. Maybe we'll have a beer to loosen up, but we ain't going to be drunk. We ain't going to be messed up.
Right.
When you have a bad night on stage, I'm going to let you know. Hey, you dropped your boys at this point during the show when normally they're looking for you on that jam band turnaround. You just left them hanging, and I saw it happen, and here's the video footage to prove it. You were saying that Apophenia was your first time to actually have somebody else step into that producer role with you.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting kind of interesting way to do it. My friend Chris Haynes, who I met probably about the same time I met Adam Aronson in San Francisco. He's a kind of amazing engineer who I've always kind of like one of my first assistant engineer jobs was assisting for Chris, and he's worked with Norah Jones and Ministry and like all these, you know, Weezer, Brian Bell from Weezer. And I've kept in touch with him throughout the years. I think he's, you know, one of my best friends. And I was out visiting Adam a couple years ago, and Chris came up. He lives in Yuba City, and Adam lives in Chico. And Chris drove up, and we were drinking. He's like, "Hey, man, like, what would you be interested in ever like helping me make a record?" Because he has mastered all the Big Jaw EPs.
Okay.
He masters them, and you know, he gives me advice too. If I have a question, like, "What do you think about this?" I call Chris, or I call my friend Steve Holdsworth, and they kind of weigh in a little bit, so I'm not completely on my own on an island. And I was kind of like, "Well, let me see if Chris wants to do it." And he said yes. So we talked about it, and what we ended up doing was I rented a room at Austin Music Rooms for a month because I don't have a place to do drums or anything.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And in that month, at the beginning of every week, Chris and I would FaceTime.
Okay.
And we'd talk about what I was going to do for the week, go over what I did last week, and then I would just go.
Okay.
And do it. So it was still kind of like I was doing it on my own. I was still recording everything myself.
Sure, but you were having a weekly production check-in with somebody.
This Scotch is getting to me.
That's all right.
I had someone to bounce things off. That's not the word I was looking for.
Well, it's really more the fact that you've got a lifetime editor. You've got somebody, number one, that keeps you on path.
Yes.
Keeps you from getting distracted.
That was the big thing. The big thing was, because usually it takes me a long time to finish a project because I get obsessed with stuff. And maybe I get obsessed with the wrong things.
Yeah.
So it was great to have Chris to like call, like, okay, he's like, "Yeah, that's not important right now. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Let's focus on this. This, you need to do this week.
Yeah.
Don't worry about, you know, that lyric that you're obsessed, that one line, like, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Worry about finishing the drum tracks.
We have like this much time to like get these guitars done before you have to be out of this room.
Mm-hmm. So
that kind of stuff was amazing. And it was like, lyrics to me is the hardest part. If I didn't have to write lyrics, I would probably release an EP every like 5 days.
Yeah.
But I obsess over lyrics, and I get really hung up on it. And Chris, it was really helpful to have Chris kind of saying like, you know, this is good. Move on, you know, come back to it if you feel like it, but let's move on from this. That was
huge
for me, that really keep things moving and do something more.
Yeah. Cause I mean, if you want to change a vocal, if you want to change a line, you can go in and punch record that later. There's a thousand and one ways that you can do that in post.
Well, I'm not talking about like the recording part, just like the writing part. Cause I was writing it all at the same time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's just it though. If you're going to spend an hour toiling over a line and how to change it, that hour, 2 hours could have been spent laying two guitar tracks,
right?
You know, like there's, and to have somebody keeping that checklist to keep you moving and keep you focused. Cause I can do the same thing. I mean, you see my rack behind me.
Yeah.
I could sit over here and tweak a tremolo for like an hour and a half and have three different tremolos and like, that one sounds cool. But at some point you got to get the keyboard track laid. Maybe you can punch in tremolo later on a separate track, you know, and post it in through a mixer, something like that. And then you can play with keyboard tracks all day, you know, like you can play with that overlay effect all day.
Right.
But the important thing is getting that track done
and
getting it finished. And yeah, having somebody to not necessarily lord over you, but to keep you in check.
Yeah. Cause all same thing too, where in the past, when I've worked on a song, I'll figure it out eventually. You know, I'll listen to a song. You know how it is when you're working on something, you listen to the song over and over and over. Like each one of these songs, before the record even was finished, I probably listened to each song probably 3,000 times. Like I'm not kidding. Like when you're working on it, it's just you just listen and listen, listening for the cracks, listening for like, oh, I didn't hear that before.
Yeah.
Or, you know, listening for, is it done?
Yeah, that note was a half measure behind.
Yeah, not even that, but yeah. Just like,
just the minutiae. Yeah,
exactly.
The minutiae.
And the stuff that you only hear when you listen to it over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
And Chris kind of sped up that process a little bit too, where it was like, I would have got there eventually, but it was like, okay, I hear this part needs something. We need something to fill this hole. We need, this part is too much. Okay, you have enough guitars. This part does not have enough guitars. That kind of thing, which was kind of huge.
Yeah, yeah. Having somebody send you, I guess, session notes,
yeah,
as it were.
But the thing I'm discovering now that it's finished is that part of that process of me really like listening over and over and over and internalizing it has changed, because I'm doing that now that it's over and I'm listening to it, because there's another hand on it that I couldn't, you know, fully process what changes he was making to,
sure,
it in the moment until I've had listened to it 3 million times and internalized it in a way that only happens if you listen to it a bazillion times.
Now, as someone who's listened to his own music to the point of not only ad nauseum, but to where my wife couldn't listen to my music for like a year, yeah, and a half, you know, like she, I guess it was probably about a year, 2 years ago, we were driving to Houston and Shakuhachi Jones came on our just USB player in the car. And I went to change it and she was like, oh, no, you can keep that on. That's all right. And I was like, whoa. You're going to let Shaq Jones play? And she's like, well, I don't dislike the music. It's just that I heard the same stuff day in, day out, all day long,
yeah,
for months on end.
Yep.
And not everybody's built for that process. Not everybody's ready for that kind of production / post-production process. How did it change your, I guess, your overall view of Apophenia as a final product? Do you feel the moment of completion inside of you? Not having gone through that fine tooth comb process as it goes on, like you normally would, obsessive process that we
obsess.
Do.
I did obsess, but like I was saying, like, it's just a little bit more of me still trying to process, like, okay, how would this have been if I did this on my own? And what did Chris add? Chris added a lot. Chris added a ton. And Chris made it, like, you know, a more manageable process, really, was, like, the big thing. And he's still kind of, we're still working together. He's trying to help me. Because so I think the biggest tragedy of this band is that I'm in charge of promoting it. Because I don't know. I really don't know what I'm doing. Like, all these things I'm figuring out now. Like, this is my fourth EP. And it's like, oh, I should have been doing that. From the beginning, I should have been doing that 8 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah, all these things, all these little things that are like so big, like, oh, this band just formed. How are they doing this? Like, oh, because they know what they're doing. Someone is like, they're submitting things to the right people. And
sure,
all these things that I've never done just because I didn't know that I was supposed to do it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I submitted stuff. I like was looking for places to send it, but just sending things and talking to all the wrong people.
Okay. Well, let's get into that for a minute, because that's one of the things that, of course, every musician is looking for.
That's the hardest
part. Where, you know, how to get it out there, where to get it out there.
I feel like that is a full-time job.
It is a full-time job.
I've spent my whole life, like, listening to music and trying to, like, figure out how to make music and how to produce a record and listening to recordings. And it's like, now all of a sudden, like, I'm jumping in the deep end of having to, like, try to promote that stuff, which I don't, I mean, it's some in-depth stuff. I feel
it
like
is.
People that do it and know how to do it, it's amazing. Like, it's a skill.
Yeah. It's a skill in and of itself, most definitely.
Is.
There's a reason why there's A&R people, PR people.
It takes talent to do that stuff. It takes the right kind
absolutely.
Of like mindset.
Well,
and the right...
even, I'm sure you can attest to it, being a musician, having been on stage for years and years. It takes something to build a proper show to begin with, even to book a proper show that's not just a random conglomeration of people playing.
All that's
not like here's five dudes that had Friday evening free and didn't want $500 a band.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm talking about my life right now.
but seriously, like when you do step into those venues, when you do find those promoters that are like putting a show on and they're calling you and your band because you fit this bill.
Yeah.
Like I was saying earlier, to not that a ska horn section wouldn't sound epic behind your stuff, but when somebody gets a hold of your CD or your EPK, your electronics press kit, and they hear a ska band, ska horn section playing in the background.
Let's clarify.
You are not ska.
You mentioned a ska horn section.
No.
There's no ska section on any.
Don't look for any ska in this. It's nowhere near ska. It's just an example.
But it is like there are bands like I have big respect for bands that have that figured out. And that's where I'm at now. A billion years after I started this thing, I'm trying to okay, what did they do? This band is like doing some good stuff.
Yeah.
Like they're getting good shows. They're like getting press. I'm trying to figure out what they're doing. That's where I'm at right now. I'm trying to learn that part of the game, which is like, it's hard. It's cryptic.
Well, and as an independent artist, it's probably a good 40% of the game. It really is. It's hard. Just now, have my shows and the shows that we have on the HC Universal Network started really lifting up.
Yeah.
In the ranks, and that's literally the concept of business. I've been to so many business seminars and worked them and just heard that concept of if you don't have a business plan, if you don't have a 6-month, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan, like written down somewhere.
I don't have a business plan.
Do it. Do it.
Should. Yeah, do this it. Is the stuff. This is the
because
stuff.
Because those are
out.
The
yeah.
things that make you like, in a year from now, when you have it on your calendar and it's staring you in the face that this was your 1 year goal.
Well, I have that. So it's that's the thing of all those 1 year from now, whatever, all that stuff in my mind is like, I do have those things just based on like songwriting and recording and all that stuff. It's like, I have to have another track in my mind.
You do.
To have, okay, so in 6 months, I want to have another EP ready to go.
Yep.
But then I need to also be like, okay, in 6 months, I need to have all my little promotion things.
You need to have by
that
point.
I just found that out. So I just released this EP and released a CD, and I'm finding out, I spend a lot of my spare time reading the internet.
Good. Good.
What should I be doing? And I found this article talking about all these things you should be doing months before you release it. Like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, here I am now on my fourth EP. And I just found that out. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I should have been doing all this stuff.
Hyping it up, doing audiograms, you know, just
little
things like
that.
Sending little samples.
Like press releases.
Exactly.
Before. Okay.
Yeah. Pre-release dates.
Okay. Here, check this out. I don't even know about press releases. I've heard press release. Oh, I can send a press release?
Sure.
Oh, no. I found that out like this past summer. This is how much I do not understand any
of
this stuff.
It's what most people don't understand, though, Clint.
But I sent a press release. In my hometown of Fort Wayne, Indiana, we did a CD, this Apophenia Fort Fun, it's a double EP on a CD. We had the CD release party at the Brass Rail in Fort Wayne this past summer. And my very first press release, and they put it in the paper.
Hell yeah.
That was a win right there.
Hell yeah.
Pretty good.
And you have it framed, right?
I should.
You should.
Yeah, I should.
You should.
They put my picture in it.
Yeah.
My mom's friends saw it.
You should frame it. I'm a big, if you look up on my wall up there, you can see album covers of stuff that I've released framed up. I truly believe that those are things that put that out into the universe.
Yeah, but those are the things like, you do press releases, you do all this stuff. And that's what I didn't know. Like, why is nobody listening to this? How do I get to people?
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's... And, you know, I'm learning. I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, and that's just it, though, is that most people are stabbing in the dark.
Yeah.
And that's why I do this show. Like, the whole reason I started Talking Sound was because whenever I would meet people that I used to do theater with and stuff like that and record music with, they'd be like, dude, how'd you get into that? How'd you? Like, it was not hard. It really wasn't. It was meeting a couple of people. And now I'm more than welcome and happy to, like, let people know those people's contact info as long as they're a hard worker, a good worker, and willing to ask questions and learn.
But that's what I think, though, is that I feel like I look at some bands. Like, I know some bands. I've seen some bands that were, like, great. Like, oh, man, that band was great. Whatever happened to them? Why'd they break up? But I feel like the people that have any kind of success, so all it takes is, like, the people that don't give up.
That's it.
The people that just keep doing
it.
And I've committed to just being that guy.
And it's obvious.
I'm not going to give up. I don't know like what the top of this ladder is going to be. I don't have high expectations.
Sure.
It'd be cool to play a show with, you know, with a bunch of people at it. That would be cool.
Yeah.
That's all I want. But but I'm gonna be the guy that doesn't give up. I'm gonna be the guy that's still trying to figure it out. Like here, I'm still there's still so much to learn about how to promote and how to get it out there. Like I'm just like scratching the surface after reading about it for like literally like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, how do people do it before the internet? How do people know about that stuff?
Yeah.
That also blows my mind.
Yeah. It was well, it's like we were saying the other day, you know, like who the hell figured out that you needed to boil the brains of a coyote so that you could cure the coyote's fur? You know,
no,
so
that I was part of that conversation.
I guess you weren't. I guess you were right next to us. But yeah, you know, like how does this knowledge get disseminated? You know, like these dirty, deep secrets of the industry that really aren't like hugely kept secrets. It's just one of those that like nobody wants to tell you how to run the soundboard because they're afraid you're going to take over their job behind the soundboard.
I do feel like though.
And I've felt it in the music industry as well, where like people that you work with, people that you play with, people that you share stages with.
I don't feel like anybody's like, for my experience so far, as far as this, like promoting the band, I don't feel like anybody's like keeping secrets.
No.
I just feel like everyone I've talked to also doesn't know. I've talked to a lot of people that are like, yeah, man, I don't know. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm trying.
Yeah.
I feel like there is like a lot of camaraderie, a lot of.
Absolutely.
In the bands that I played with in Austin who are kind of in the same boat, we're just like, okay, we're just trying to figure it out. But it's like really great bands. There's a band called Samantha Lee and the Family Tree. They're awesome. Like they're like, they put on a great show and they're doing some stuff. They're moving. They're like same thing. Like they're just pushing and pushing and pushing. But whatever they have figured out, they have shared with me and I'm trying to, you know, how did you get that show? Oh, we called this person. We did this.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. But, the one thing, now that, you know, when I'm learning these little bits of information and sending emails and whatever, because before all the past handful of years, I was just sending emails into the dark and getting zero responses.
Yeah.
Like nothing. Crickets. Nothing. But now that I'm kind of sending these emails to the right places, even if they can't help, I am getting like positive responses. I'm getting responses. So it's like knowing where to send the emails, knowing like, I guess it's not knowing, but like,
well, learning
the right level, right level to send the email.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, is it? Do you directly approach the AR department at a record label, or is there somebody else on the back end?
Yeah, I haven't
that
even
you're supposed
got
to send it.
I'm not even talking like at labels or anything. I'm just trying to like talking about like booking shows, trying to like get out and play in front of people.
Yeah, and like I said, it's almost a hidden secret. A lot of times people are like, oh, you know, I don't know if I want to share my contact info with that person because like they may end up getting more shows there than I do. And it's funky. But I've rarely seen that.
I've seen it a few times. I feel like
a handful
of bands that I've kind of played shows with and have talked to, there's like Bryce Clifford and this guy, you know, Scout Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
You do? You know,
no, yeah.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine. Kind of, it's like information, you know, free flow of information.
Yeah.
Like, I just called Bryce yesterday, like, hey, how did you do this? When you booked that show, how'd you book it? Just like, oh, we booked it. I called this guy.
Nice.
I feel like there is a community of, and Bryce is like a little bit higher level than we are. Bryce is kind of like out doing stuff. Bryce has some like recognition, playing bigger shows. And so that's also cool that he is like still sharing what he knows with me, even though he's kind of like doing bigger stuff.
Sure.
You know
well,
I mean?
And they, you know,
I appreciate it, Bryce.
Even well, and that's the thing. We all have to lift each other up in all of these industries. Even going on. And one of the things I try to tell podcasters to do, go out and start finding groups on social media that are in your niche. Mm. So like if you've got if you're about to promote a Western movie, let's say, go out and start joining Western groups and then just go old school spycraft on them. Start liking their posts, start engaging them in conversations, stuff like that. Find groups that fit your style of music. If you're a band, that your fans follow, if you know two or three people personally that are deep into your music and love it, go see what other groups they're in and that they post music in and go join those groups.
Yeah.
That's good. And literally just start kind of dropping things in, start commenting on the admins posts, that kind of stuff. And then eventually like, hey, you know, I saw this. I'd love to be able to put my band music up there.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And you'd be surprised how those actual social networks like that, building those social connections, make a huge difference.
And that's what I'm talking about. It's not, when I say it's like, it's who you know.
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about, I know.
Exactly.
I know the president of whatever. It's like, oh, I know this guy who's put on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I know that guy. Let's do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or we're trying to put a show on. Oh, I know that guy. Let's bring them on.
Yep.
Or gal.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at bands like Golden Dawn Orchestra here locally, stuff like that have really stepped forward in the festival scene, that kind of stuff. And those guys are promotion machines.
Yeah.
Promotion machines.
They put on a good show.
And they put on a great show. And they're one of them that's got like 18 people up on stage. It floats between 8 and 18.
I saw them at Sam's Town Point.
Oh my God, dude! Yeah. How did they even fit the whole band into Sam's Town Point?
Stage. It was great.
Was there an actual microphone on stage?
Yeah, it was. I think I was at South by last year.
Oh my God, dude!
Yeah,
that's
great.
Epic. Because Sam's Town is one of my favorite places in town to catch a show.
That's a good spot.
It's great. It's out of the way. It's not like anywhere near the main thoroughfare, and it's somewhere that like you're gonna be the distance away from your band that I am from you right now.
Exactly.
You're going to be able to hang out and have a cigarette with them on break, stuff like that. Yeah. You know, it's not like, oh yeah, they squirreled off to the green room. We aren't going to see them all night. Green room's right outside. Yeah.
The green room is like the bench.
It's the back
the
patio
at the end of the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great. But that's just it. It's meeting people like that, picking their brains, being able to provide them with information as well. You know, being whether it be, this is a great place to go record, this is somebody cool to pick up on a session track, or things like that. It is really a sharing of information.
It's, searching for that community. And it is, like, there is, you know, there are several Austin music communities, I think.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it is a small town.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely one of those incestuous rock and roll towns.
Yeah.
Where people band hop, people hop in and out of bands, people hop up on stage with other people, stuff like that. Portland, Maine was very, very much like that. Whenever I lived up there, it's what I tried to explain to people was, it was like Austin, Texas with an ocean view.
Is that where you're from?
It's not where I'm from, but I lived there for about 5-6 years almost.
Okay. Where are you from?
Houston.
Okay.
Houston originally.
Right down the
street. And it was interesting to me to move from one scene to another and then to move here. And to have been involved somewhat in the Austin scene before I moved up there, coming out, helping run side stages for festivals, stuff like that. And then going up there where it was much more of a, boots on the ground, really hack it out for gigs on a Saturday night. 'Cause as opposed to here where we've got 40 bars just in Sixth Street, there were maybe 10 bars to play at in Portland. So
do you think that was a good thing or a bad thing? Because I feel like, so where I'm from in Fort Wayne, there aren't a ton of venues, but there are a handful of really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And when cool shit happens, people come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like having too many bars. When something cool happens, it's like,
It's hard to create an event
exactly.
in Austin because there's an event every night.
There are 100 events every night.
Yeah. Yeah. Like guaranteed there's somebody that just came into town on a tour and they're going to be playing like a 1 a.m. set at the Elephant Room and they paid to close the place down. You know, stuff like that.
So do you think that was having 10 bars?
I think it's definitely the fact that you've got the plethora to choose from.
Yeah.
And you could definitely have underground events all over the place.
Right.
As is shown year after year at South by Southwest, ACL, all the counter festivals that happen that are just as big as any regular festival.
Right.
Where it's like, oh yeah, you know, we got 10,000 people to our, you know, anti South by South by Southwest.
Yeah. We played at, we played at. Oh, man.
That's all right.
Maybe edit this pause out. I'll
throw some crickets in.
Scotch. I've been drinking too much.
Yeah.
Chris says, you can't say on the radio, but Chris
sure you
put
can.
A big bottle of scotch.
This isn't the radio. This is the interwebs.
Interweb.
We can do whatever we want. This is America.
But, you know, scotch fog. I'm going to scotch fog a little bit.
But
Red Gorilla Fest.
Okay.
We played Red Gorilla Fest. Okay. And it was a blast.
Yeah.
That was our first kind of like South By experience. It wasn't official South By.
Yeah.
I have stopped applying for the South By thing.
Yeah.
Because they have to want you.
Yeah.
If you're going to play official South By showcase, they are going to call you, right?
Yeah. Pretty much. Either
you
that
don't
or
pay the $100 to apply.
Yeah.
They want you and they'll.
Yeah. They'll seek you out.
Exactly.
They'll gladly seek you out.
If you're in town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's definitely
that's how. And I don't. I get that. I mean,
and it's definitely a situation of who you know.
They have over like 30,000 bands apply. Yeah. I don't know how you even sort. I did find out how they sort through it. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. That's a podcast in and of itself.
But, until we get a little more traction, I've stopped applying for South By official South By.
Yeah.
But.
Side stage South By things
played,
like that off
we played
by
this Red Gorilla Fest that happens. It's a concurrent South By event,
mm-hmm.
and it was packed. It was everyone was there to listen to music.
Yeah,
everyone was there. It was like all eyes up front.
Yep,
it was a fucking blast, man. It was so fun. We'd definitely do it again.
Good to hear.
Yeah, hopefully.
Good to hear.
Maybe we'll do it again next year.
As a musician up on stage, for those of us out in the audience, what's probably your biggest pet peeve, Clint? I don't mind if people talk. They're in a bar.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's fine.
My biggest pet peeve, quite honestly, was people coming up and... I'm a sound guy. My biggest pet peeve was people coming up and using our subwoofers as friggin' tables. It's like, and they aren't even mine. They belong to the video.
Yeah,
and it's like, really, dude? Now I get to sit here and like listen to your girl ass rattle around on the subwoofer while I'm kicking synth lines. You know, I just get to hear this going off that wasn't there before. That was probably my biggest pet peeve was people doing stuff like that and like coming up and setting drinks down right next to pedal boards, you know, so that they could dance.
Yeah, that's,
that kind of thing. What's your biggest one up on stage? What's the one that, when it happens, can almost take you out of zone?
I don't know if I have one.
Really?
Anything that like, you know, that irritates me on stage or takes me out of zone is something that like that I have done personally.
Okay. Okay. So it's like your own fumble fingers on
like
your guitar.
Well, yeah, if I can't hear what I'm doing. If
sure.
It's like if the I've switched. I bought a cheap in-ear monitor system.
All right.
Which has changed everything for me. I bought it on Craigslist for $200.
Okay.
It was a little Shure PSM 200. I have it mounted under my pedal board.
All right.
It's pretty slick.
Yeah.
And I run my mic right into it. My voice and my guitar go right into my ears.
Yeah.
And I don't have like custom fits. So it's just like wearing earplugs. So I can still hear stage. I can still hear Marty. I can still hear Eshek.
Yeah.
But I have control over how loud I hear my voice. How loud. And if there's problems with the monitors or feedback, like, hey man, you can take it out. If you're having troubles with these monitors, I don't need them. Yeah. It's nice to have that little bit of extra support from those, from floor wedges. But if it's a problematic, I don't need them because I've got ears. But that's my pet peeve, which I figured out how to eliminate.
It's that's
not
good.
Being able to hear my voice or hear my guitar. And I don't know. Pet peeve. I guess, I don't know, man. You generally have a pretty good time up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine was always, you know, things like that. And, like you were saying, technical issues, things that were normally
technical
me,
issues,
that it was like, I can't do anything about that now. That's in the middle of a live show.
Technical issues. In my puppy. Yeah. I try, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm going to say this. I'm going to knock on wood because we got a show coming up. I'm pretty prepared for a situation, you know, like that. Like, how do I, here's this problem. How can I solve it?
Yeah.
Here's this problem. Okay. I can't hear myself on stage. How do I solve it? I'm going to try to get an in-ear system. Oh, in-ear systems are $1,000. I'm going to keep looking on Craigslist until I find one for $200.
And you know, just making sure that you have yourself in place, making sure that you're ready to go.
But I've got, I carry a backup, a pedal size backup amp.
Oh, nice.
I have a Quilter, like a little 40 watt Quilter.
Yep.
That if my amp, I play vintage amps, so they're prone to like taking dumps. So I have this little amp. It's the size of like a deck of cards.
Yeah.
It's a 40 watt amp that if my amp takes a dump.
Yeah, like one of the little Smokies.
Yeah.
You can just plug in line on the back end of your.
Yeah. I'll just unplug my speaker, which is on a quarter inch, and just plug it right into that guy. Yeah. I haven't had to do it yet. Knock on wood, but I've got that. I always have a pack of strings on top of my amp.
Yeah, and see, I was never personally an amp-driven sound guy.
Okay.
Most of my stuff was in the electronic realm, so. Right. I was much more of an effect-driven guitar player, and mine was always, I just threw like an ART tube pre, because it was 9-volt powered. It could run off the same power strip as your DC brick.
So are you going like direct?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was like...
When you say you're not amp-driven,
you you can crank that thing all day long into the monitors if you want. We will not have any feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Here's your direct output, and it's nice and warm like a tube. And it's direct. So
do you still play? Do you play out?
You know, I've been considering it lately with I've seen a few things pop up lately where it's like, you know, like chill electronic music night. And it's like, well, where the hell's that been? that's some stuff I can play on. A lot of my stuff involves, of course, playing to a backing track, but doing a lot of improvisational things and looping and stuff like that, like esoteric sound meandering.
Yeah, that's cool. I can see that with all the gear.
All the patch bays and things like that.
Yep.
I had a big board about, it was basically the size of a keyboard case that would just go up on a stand and had, I've got them in here, I'll show them to you, but it was like all my different noise makers.
That Zoom, on different, that Zoom 120?
The 1204?
Do you use that use the vocoder in there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Vocoder in that thing is dope.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Zoom delays. They give you, like, second and beyond delays, stuff like that. I love it.
That was the first
super fun
effects box I ever owned.
It was one of the first ones I ever had, too. And it is, you know, for a quarter inch and out, just absolutely beautiful. You can pick them up for like $60 all day long.
It's
used.
One of those things where it's like a lot of people bought them because they were cheap, but it turns out there's some like gold in there.
Oh yeah, yeah. And you know, it's funny. That's one of the reasons why the tagline for this show is "Where -10 is a number to be desired." that is nowhere in shape or form a pro level.
Yeah.
Like when it comes to sound quality.
Right.
But hey, man, if that's the sound you're looking for, and that's where you can get that sound, use it.
Yep.
Use it. I just ran across like 3 old school DBX, like 1-channel compressors that I keep around because, hey man, sometimes that's the hardcore sound I'm looking for.
Like what model?
Like 234s, stuff like that, you know, where it was literally just a slider.
Right.
It was like input, output, slider. It was like, I want this much compression. You know, all over easy compression, but like whenever you look them up, they're still like $100 a pop,
right?
You know, and it's like, damn, that's like a 35-year-old piece of half rack gear that still sells for $100 all day long and that people still look for,
right?
Or you know, like that, the 163s, like, things like that. Like,
it amazes me how much, I guess we're talking about sound, we can get some geek gear talk.
Oh, absolutely, geek out.
Like how much the Lexicons still sell for.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, it's crazy. I saw, you know, they're not nearly as much as they used to be, but there's a guy on Craigslist right now that has like a 480L for like $3,000.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
How, I don't know, man.
It's the same way with those ADAs that you see up here.
How do you justify paying $3,000 for a box?
For a reverb.
Yeah, for a box that, like, you know, I have, it's a model of it. And I'm sure it doesn't quite live up to it, but it lives up to it pretty well.
For like $100 yeah, for exactly. the plugin.
Exactly. You know? It sounds great.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How would someone justify paying $3,000 for that right now? My thing is amps.
Yeah.
I love vintage amps. And that's my thing. Like guitars, I feel like guitars are going to hold. Guitars are going to be.
Yeah.
For a long time. Until people stop playing guitars altogether, if that happens. But amps are a thing. No one's going to, at a certain point, I think people are going to, the value of vintage amps is going to plummet.
Yeah.
Because, you can recreate the sound of a vintage amp. They're doing it now. They're pretty close right now.
They're pretty close to a lot of stuff when it comes to amp emulation.
And who wants to carry around an 85-pound?
Yeah.
I have a 62 concert. And it's
oh my God, dude. Yeah, that is about 80 pounds.
It's heavy.
That is a piece of furniture.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's something like, I got it cheap. I got it super cheap. But that's not going to hold its value. In 10 years, no one's going to want that. Maybe. That's my thought. A guitar, though, I mean, that's something you hold in your hands. You can't recreate. Maybe. Well, I say that now. Someone's going to figure out a way to recreate the feel of a vintage guitar. But guitars keep going up and up and up. And I feel like, a guitar is something is different.
Yeah.
It's an instrument that like I think guitar investing in guitars might be a smarter thing until people stop playing guitars altogether. That's the
sure.
other thing, but because you can get the sound of any guitar, you can emulate the sound, but you can't emulate the feel of it in your hands.
No,
and that's the difference between an amp and a guitar. And a guitar doesn't take up that much space; it's not that heavy. But all these vintage amps that I have, I feel like I'm going to take a bath.
Yeah. Well, and
but I love them. I love them.
For me,
it's so cool.
And I mean, I love building guitars, stuff like that. Like you were looking at a couple of mine earlier. Like yeah. I think that white one, I spent all of $100 building. And my former host of Dudes and Beer had it for like the last year and a half playing it live on stage. He just loved the way it sounded.
It looks cool and, shit.
Yeah. No, I just had somebody borrow it to take pictures actually for a art in music exhibit that they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's cool, man. You want to take pictures of one of my builds?
To
that's
describe
awesome.
It for the podcast, it is it's a Strat. It's aged.
Yeah, it's got the ghetto age on it.
Yeah. but it also has like 1, 2, 3, 4 multi-position switches along with the 5-position toggle switch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And two of those are 3-way toggle switches that control the tone and the tone that actually give you boost or dampen on it's up as boost, down as dampen, middle as stock. So it changes the actual range of your tone knob. On both of those. Then the other one is a 3-way switch that goes between parallel, series, and all on. And then the last switch is just on off and is the standard Gilmore switch that goes on guitars that lets you first position or fifth position have the neck or bridge on at the same time. And that was just one of those. I was bored. I had a whole bunch of, I was in a huge parts buying binge for a while. Many years ago where it was like, oh, look at that. There's a Strat body for $20. And I just pick up Strat body and hold on to it.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I'll find a neck at some point for $20. And like, I'd build $50 guitars in an afternoon, you know, just hacking things together with old parts. And I loved it. It was fun.
You could probably like turn around and sell that for like at least $200.
Easily.
Yeah.
I could smooth triple my money what I spent on it. I spent probably about $45, $50 on all the parts.
Yeah.
It was pickups that I had kicking around, you know, stuff like that. So for me, stuff like that, but trying to find your signature sound.
Yeah.
We were talking about this on the road. I don't understand people that are using the Strymon timelines. They're beautiful sounding. They're amazing. But if you make that an integral part of your sound, where are you going to replace that boutique pedal? You know, when you're on the tail, is there somewhere in Fort Wayne, Indiana
yeah.
that carries Strymon timelines in stock?
Yeah. Sweetwater Sound.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess that's true. Yeah. Sweetwater's right there.
Like, the biggest, like, music, online music retailer in the world.
Yeah, that's right. So,
yes,
I forgot.
Yes, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, there happens to be a
tiny little, like, half the size of Fort Wayne, Indiana warehouse that stocks all that stuff.
But vintage guitars, though, like, yeah. I had a chance to buy, when I lived in California for a while, and I wanted to buy there was a 62 or 63 Jazzmaster Olympic White, and it was like $1,700. I was like, it's too much.
Yeah.
I can't pay $1,700 for that guitar. Yeah. Those guitars are like $6,000 now.
Yeah.
Same thing with my kind of, that's one of my dream guitars with the tapered neck.
Yeah.
I just love the way they feel. They feel so amazing, and I wish I'd have bought that guitar. Another one is the best sounding guitar. My favorite sounding guitar is like a 62 or 63 Les Paul Junior, like the SG.
Yeah.
With the P90s.
Yep, with the single pickup.
The best sounding rock guitar.
Yeah.
Man, I would like, and same thing. I went into Norm's Rare Guitars to buy one. I had the cash to buy one. And this was like,
wow.
This was like 2001. And it was like, I think it was like 1900, 2 grand.
Yeah, I was going to say close to $2,000. Yeah.
And I was like, I had the cash. And I was like, I couldn't get anyone to help. I couldn't get anyone to take my money. And I was like, this is it. I went in three times. That's probably why they didn't come over to me, because I went in three times to look at this guitar and didn't buy it. But then I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go buy this guitar.
And there's the tip, salesman. Yeah. When you see the people coming in playing it two or three times, just keep in touch with them. Say hi to them whenever they come in. They're obviously interested in buying a $2,000 guitar.
Yeah, but I decided, I was like, I'm going to buy this guitar. I'm going to do it. I'm going to buy it. And I went in, and I like couldn't get, it's like, you know, they weren't busy, but they were talking to their friends and hanging out and whatever.
Did you just hold up the guitar and a wad of bills?
I went, played the guitar. I went and waited at the counter for a little bit, and then kind of walked back and played the guitar, and then walked over to the, like no one was interested in like acknowledging me. And I was kind of like, at a certain point, I could have been like, excuse me, help me buy this guitar, but at a certain point I was like,
you know what?
I was on the fence. I was like, this is a ton of money. And in 2001, whatever, it's still 2000, it's a lot of money now.
Even now, $2,000 on an instrument.
It was a ton of money. And it's like, I was like, and that was like kind of, okay, if someone like acknowledges that I'm here, standing here waiting at this counter, I will buy this guitar.
Yep.
And justify and be happy. If no one does, this is my out. I'm not going to buy this guitar. But now that guitar is $6,000, like a 62 or 63. It's like,
yeah, it's like three times the price.
Like, there's no possible way. I have a friend who owns a guitar store in Sacramento, and he has one, and it's beautiful. And he posted it, and I was like, oh my God, that's like my dream guitar. How much? And he's like, yeah, it's like $6,000.
Yeah, like 5,500. Right. Yeah, I could take 5,500 and be happy.
Nope, someone will buy that and be happy. It's not going to be me. Mm-hmm. I missed my window to buy that.
I've definitely been in that exact same situation where it's like, you know what? I can leave without this today and be perfectly happy and satisfied.
Yeah.
With my rig, with my sound, everything. Somebody comes over and wants to make the sale, I'll gladly give them my wad of cash.
Exactly. You're like gambling.
And it's one of those,
you're
like
gambling.
You need to earn this sale today.
It's not even that. Where it's like, I'm not committed. I can't, like, oh my God, am I really going to spend this much money? All right. If someone comes over and helps me.
Yeah. I'll do it.
It's like a coin flip.
It is. And it's a 50-50 coin flip. Well,
At that spot at Norm's Guitars.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to badmouth Norm's Guitars. But they did kind of burn me. I bought a bass from them. They kind of burned me.
Oh, no. Sorry, Norms. Sorry, Norms.
Yeah, you know, and they also kind of like, I don't know who that is. We're not going to.
Well, there is definitely that concept. And what did you learn from that?
What did I learn from that? I don't know. I should have bought that guitar because it's worth $6,000 now.
There's that.
Yeah.
For me, I did a lot of pawn shopping.
Yeah,
when I was building studio many, many years ago. And I've always been a fan of buy used until you can afford new.
Right.
You're much better off using a piece of gear with maybe a quirk or two in it and learning to really use the gear before you invest. I mean, because, hey, it may be the fact that you don't need to go with the upgraded version. Yeah. You don't need to go with the most modern version that costs $1,000 more.
Right.
you may be able to get away with a $250 used version like what you did with your in-ears.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I
Which
recommend
actually
that.
Worked better than
yeah.
I could have imagined.
Yeah. And you know, I'm a huge fan of that. Like I was saying, with signature sound especially, I'm a big believer in you should use something readily available, especially if you're a touring musician, if you're somebody that's up on stage on the regs. If you're like me and you're just producing studio music, hey man, use whatever you want.
Yeah.
But if you're out on the road, you need stuff that is roadworthy, and that you can replace on the fly if you need to.
I read Premier. Do you read Premier Guitar?
Yeah.
I love a great website. I love that. Like the Joe Gore column. Mm. Is that Premier Guitar? Is Joe Gore on Premier Guitar?
Yeah, I believe
I think so.
So.
Yeah. Whatever he's on, it's great too. But the rig rundown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But they did, it was like Brad Paisley maybe, or Tim McGraw, one of those guys, where it was that same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're, and maybe it wasn't Brad Paisley, but there was like a certain, like all their pedals.
Yeah.
Are pedals they could buy anyway, but they also had like a road case filled with that one pedal. Like
yeah.
They had like 50 of them.
Yep.
In case, so it's yeah. like, okay, if anything goes wrong,
yeah,
we got it. We got it right
here. Like, quite honestly, as a pedal modder, one of my favorites is the DS1. Like the Boss DS1, just okay. The $30 orange, go out and buy it anywhere distortion
my
pedal.
My buddy Mitch, Mitch Fraser, who was an awesome guy in a band called Church Shoes. You remember them?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, is it the OD1?
Yep.
Yeah, that's his thing.
Yeah.
He's big into, he has like every version of the OD1.
Yeah. Yeah, and those circuits are so moddable.
Yeah.
Like they're just so open-ended. So open-ended. You can do so many things with them. For Austin Hot Mods, I probably have about 5 different mods that I do for the DS1. Because it's just such an open-ended circuit. And I might go ahead.
Can I ask yeah. you an ethical question?
Yeah.
I thought about this. Okay. So back to like gear and finding deals and pawn mm-hmm. shops and mm-hmm. all stuff. So I think like finding like crazy deals on like vintage gear
yeah.
is mostly over with the internet. Because people, if they have, oh, what's this thing? I'm going to look it up on the internet. Oh, it's worth this much. Oh, because I used to hear stories
sure.
about guys like going to a rummage sale at a church and they had like vintage Neumann 67s, like matched pair. And
yeah.
they're asking like $50 and they're like, yeah. you know, it's like,
Mom, we've just had them kicking around in the sacristy for 10 years.
Each, and yeah. like, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's the question. Okay, so.
I've found them.
I have a friend. What?
I've found crazy pieces like that.
But so here's the ethical question.
Okay.
I have a buddy who found a Blackface Champ
mm-hmm.
at a garage sale. They were asking like $35.
Was he nice and at least gave him $200?
I don't remember. I don't remember, but that's like, I don't think so. But that's the question. So, you know, I'll go to garage sales, and that's always the thing. Like, okay, I'm always looking for, I'm always
I'll give
looking
you 70.
For a guitar. I'm always looking for an amp. I'm always looking for a microphone.
Same here.
But,
same here.
But, and then I ask myself, like, what would happen if I found that? What if I went yeah. to a church garage sale? If I went to someone's,
yeah, man.
You know, a little old lady, and yeah. she happened to have, like, her husband was a radio guy and had a match pair of, like, 67s. Like,
garage sale I see totally differently than a pawn shop.
It is. It is. But and that's just a pawn yeah. shop is a different story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're, you know.
Here's the thing.
They're predators almost.
I got no problem hustling a pawn shop because I've been hustled by more than one pawn shop.
A church garage, church rummage sale, you see a match pair of like Neumann M49s.
If they're selling them for $50 each, I'll double that money for them.
Really? You wouldn't say like, oh, that's the question. Like, do you say like, okay, I'll give you $100 each.
These are really worth a whole lot more.
Or do you say, hey,
I'll give you double what you're asking.
I'm not sure if you know what you have here. What do you do? Do you,
if I were in the situation,
I feel like I would maybe say, let them know.
I'm a big believer in, yeah, yeah.
And that happens. Like,
if you're selling a $1,500 mic,
they have all these crazy vintage mics. I don't know if it happens so much now, but like in the past, like 20 years when churches are being remodeled,
it still happens.
These insane tube microphones.
Yeah.
And it's like,
you gotta. I've run across a couple of pieces.
I would tell them, I would say, what you have here is worth
a whole, even if it's broken, yeah, it's worth more than it's worth more than double what
just
you're asking.
The badge that's on it, if it has a Telefunken or Neumann badge,
exactly.
Just that badge.
Just that badge is worth $50 bro.
Just that badge is worth $1,000
I watch a lot of American Pickers, and good Lord, if I've got the wad of cash in my pocket to be able to pay the money properly for something, I'll do it all day long.
Yep.
I'll gladly treat somebody right and make sure that they're getting the price point that they're asking for a piece of gear. I've had more than one person whose family member has passed that's come to me because they were in this industry and they just don't know what to do.
Yep.
They have no idea. They'd love to do a garage sale and sell it all or sell it all outright. Mm. What's a fair price to ask? And I immediately take the concept of Guitar Center. As soon as it walks out the door, I don't care if you plugged it in or not, it's worth half the price.
Right.
You've walked out the establishment with it. I don't know what you've done with it at that point. It's worth half of whatever it's worth on the shelf, immediately. So whenever you go into a pawn shop, this is just me, folks. I'm always on the bargain and I'm always willing to ask them, number one, do you have the cables to hook this up? I'd love to test this piece of gear out.
Pawn shops are fair game because most pawn shops are like overcharging for everything anyhow.
Well, yeah, and their concept is, and I used to work at a used music place, and we would guarantee the fact that we would beat any pawn shop all day long on a price.
Well, the thing about pawn shops is they're making, I mean, it's like...
They're trying to make 10 points.
They're the original fast cash or whatever, you have payday loan.
They are the longest existing form of loan.
They make the money on the loans.
Yeah,
like the gear and all the things that they sell is just icing on the cake, right?
Well, to an extent, the idea is that this guitar hanging on the wall, if you went out and bought it new, is worth $300.
Right.
They aren't going to sell it for $300. They'll probably sell it for $250. Their idea is to buy it for $50.
Well,
they want to make five points, which means they want to make five times or four times over what they spent to bring it through the door.
Yeah.
So if they bought it for $50, they want to sell it for $250.
But that's not what pawn shops do.
No. Oh, no.
Pawn shops, like, I had a girlfriend who had.
Oh, they sell it for right up at new price.
Well, she had a lot of jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, all this is before I met her.
Oh, yeah.
She had all this jewelry that meant a lot to her. It was like her grandmother's jewelry.
Yeah.
But she, like, needed to pay her rent.
Yeah.
All stuff. So she pawned it. And when you pawn it, you don't sell it. Yeah. You use that as collateral.
It's a loan.
Using a collateral for a loan. So she had it in there for, by the time I met her, it was already in there for like 5 years.
Ooh.
Like she had paid for that jewelry
three, four times over.
That's how pawn shops make their money.
Oh,
is
yeah.
From those loans of people that like have something that's sentimental that they want to, that they have put up as collateral because that's all they have.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, punch-ups are the original payday loan, really.
Number one, anybody, if you're going out, I made it a hard and fast rule a long time ago not to sell used gear.
Yeah. You don't sell stuff.
I try not to.
Yeah.
I'm up against the point right now just with...
The guy that co-produced this record, he's like, never sell gear. You'll regret it.
And that's you'll regret
anything
it.
That I've ever sold.
You'll regret it.
I used to have a Jazzmaster.
Yep.
And I sold it when I left San Francisco to go to L.A.
Yep.
And I sold it for cheap.
Yep. And you sold it because you needed the money, that's what you could get right then.
Yep.
So you took it.
I sold it for cheap.
Yeah.
And I regret it. I would love to have that guitar now.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be a signature part of your sound, no doubt. And same thing here. When I moved off to Maine many, many years ago, first thing I wasn't taking with me was a rack of equipment.
Yeah.
I wasn't taking a rack of equipment with me. I was bringing an electric guitar, no amp, and two bags of clothes with $100 in my pocket. I moved on an airplane. So that's what I brought to Maine with me. I came back and got my acoustic guitar out of Hawk on the shelf. The only reason they let me have it at the Hawk price was because I still had the receipt. and that's what you take a danger of. You take a danger in losing your guitar. Never go to the pawn shop with something that you're not willing to just never see it again.
That's Hendrix, though. Hendrix always used to pawn his guitars.
Yeah.
Money.
Oh, there was more than one person.
People would get them out.
Charlie Parker was one that was known for it.
Yeah.
Where his bandmates would take up a collection because, you know, he He was on the jazz sauce. Not the jazz cigarette, but he was on the jazz sauce. And yeah, you know, more than once his band would take up a collection to go get his horn out of Hawk so he could do the show. Yeah. And you got to be careful with that. It's tough. It's tough. That's why you got to do like me and Clint, folks. Love your music, but good Lord have mercy. Have a job, man. Do something for yourself. And to come to kind of bring all this back, Clint, it's the fact of you're a working musician, you're a passionate musician. That means that in theory you should want to do everything possible for your music to succeed. And if that means having a 30 to 40 hour a week job to make sure you can have a rehearsal space, to make sure that you can buy strings, to have gas to get to gigs, whatever, do it, man. Suffer for your art. It took me 10 years of having a business to get to the point where I didn't have a full-time job and run sound 5 nights a week. 10 years.
Yeah.
To where it was like people were calling me for work. People were calling me for corporate work. I didn't have to dig through the classifieds. I didn't have to call people up and try and wrangle a gig while I was cooking in a kitchen full time. It took a while, and it takes a while. And like we were saying, you've got to have the long play.
Yeah.
You've got to have that long play in mind. There is no shortcut.
You got to commit to like...
You do.
Be like however long it takes, and it's different for everybody.
Yeah, man.
Like Justin Bieber, it took 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some guys like me, a couple decades.
And but
but that's the thing, is like that's the difference.
Well, it's
because you gotta be the guy that like that doesn't give up.
Yeah.
But that's the only part of it, is you gotta keep growing.
Well,
you gotta keep whatever like
that's
you,
it.
You know.
Well, you gotta invest in yourself.
Find like, okay, this was good. How can I make this better? What's setting me apart from
success? I couldn't.
The people that are doing it, the music that is like,
yeah,
making it. Scotch.
No,
goddamn the
oh,
scotch,
no, no.
Man.
It's okay. Because it is an important fact. A lot of people, like you were just saying, find your shortcomings.
Yeah.
Just so you know, folks, like I work a lot of corporate AV. Which means I hear a lot of motivational speakers. That means I hear a lot of high-end CEOs talk. And what's interesting, none of these people know how to do what they do. None of them.
What do you mean?
Steve Jobs did not know how to program a computer.
Oh, yeah.
He
oh,
did
yeah,
not yeah, know how to yeah. build a computer.
Right.
What he knew was Wozniak.
Right.
And he knew other people that were great at design.
Oh, yeah.
That were top of their field. So he surrounded himself with people.
He was a motivator.
That were able to do stuff.
Yep.
You yourself as a guitarist. Sure, you could play the drums on your shit. You could pre-produce all this shit yourself.
I played the drums on Fort Fun.
Right?
I did do that.
Sorry, Marty Mac. But it's better for you to find somebody else that's better than you at drums.
Exactly. That's my thing is like,
it's better for you to surround yourself by the people that are good at it.
I want to be the worst player in my band. That's my goal.
That's an incredible goal.
I want to find, and it's tough. It's tough to find those people. But yeah. I want to be in a band where I am the worst musician.
Yep. Yeah.
Right?
No, very much that Deadpool aspect, where it's like, you know what? I want to find a planet of people that are just worse than me at everything. Just a planet of functional idiots. That way I can shine.
I want to be the worst musician in my band.
Yeah.
That's
well, because you like me, I'm looking for engineers that lift me up. I'm looking for engineers that challenge me on the daily. And it's odd. Now on the road, I live more in breakout world leading breakouts than I do in GS and working in the main room. And I find it more challenging than being in the main room because now...
Breakouts are challenging, man.
It is.
It's like a mini GS that has like...
It's like having like, 9 mini GSs or 20 mini GSs going on at the same time.
It's like daycare. Mm-hmm. Like running a daycare system.
It's herding cats. It's herding cats. It's keeping track of presenters. It's keeping track of this dude that's in charge of that hall in five rooms.
But it is.
And like, that dude that's in charge of another hall in five rooms on
all,
a different
it's
floor.
It's all, you know, the AV part of it is very important. But just as important, which I think a lot of people skip, is the customer service part of it.
Absolutely.
Is it, being the guy that's like, Chris, Mick, thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm, you know,
being the face, being the concierge,
being like, when there's a problem, I'm going to take care of it. They know that you're the guy that it's going to be, they can come to.
Yep. I'm the one that's answerable.
Yeah. And you're going to, and you will take care of it.
Absolutely.
And you'll get it done. That's the biggest part of it. That's the biggest part of the whole thing.
And that's the exact same thing. I consider myself, whenever I'm in that position, no different than when I was the lead engineer slash producer for a band. No different.
There's a problem.
My job.
You're the guy that's going to get it taken care of.
My job was to coax five egos on stage at the same time and make sure everybody was happy, be it with their monitor mix, with what they're seeing, with what's in front of them, with their sound, what have you. It's no different. It's not a concept of, no, you can't have that. It's let me see what I can do to help you. Let me see what I can do to make this show better for everybody involved. And like you're saying, having musicians that challenge you, having musicians that cause you to up your game only makes you better.
That's what I want.
It only makes you better. And that's what every musician should want. I myself, as an electronic musician, personally struggled and still struggle, Clint, with collaboration. Wes Goins was one of the only people I found that stepped into my studio. And when we were done, like recording an esoteric, just jam session, wasn't like, ooh, that felt weird. Wasn't like creeped out by the vibe. Instead, he was like, oh my God, dude, did you feel that? That was friggin' incredible. Like, you think we can make that happen again? And I was like, oh, here's somebody that's excited to make that funky, weird, like, ooh, that almost felt like uncomfortable because neither one of us knew where we were going with what we were doing. But there was still an unknown trust that was happening, that I trusted him, he trusted me, and we both ended up at this cool result that was like, oh, look at what happened with us utterly just trusting each other with this moment.
That's cool, man.
And it's a beautiful thing, and it's a hard thing to find. So when you find it with a band, when you find it with musicians that challenge you, that keep you on top of your game, that keep you striving and struggling to be better, especially the struggling part. The striving's easy. The struggles are what's hard. And when you're all struggling together to be something better than, like, that to me is a good thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the struggles that steal you together.
That I find from that, like, where is me, like, I love that feeling of going to a show and seeing someone that, like, has their shit together. Mm. And it's like, ah, man.
Yeah.
And it reminds you, like, how much work you have to do.
Yeah.
I saw Eric Gales at Antone's, and it was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Just makes you feel like inspired to go home and play. I love going to a show and that makes me want to go home and practice.
Yeah, that makes you want to go home and really polish yourself.
And
be like, ooh, I see what I could rub the edges off of on this piece right here.
Where it's like, you think, oh, I'm doing pretty good, and then you see a show that's like, nope, got a long way to go. I love those shows.
What I mean? Well, because you're striving, you're wanting to be better for yourself. And that, I think, is what all too many people don't do. They're more looking for the ways that they're strong and that they can sell themselves than looking at where they can improve.
Oh,
absolutely. No, you gotta have your chest out. You know,
as long as you're open, like, you know, you do have to push the things that you have to push your strengths. You have to promote your strengths.
You got to have
your
swagger.
As long as you have that, like, you know, in part of your mind open to, like, okay,
yeah,
this is what I'm presenting. This is what I'm saying. This is what, you know, I want the world to see.
Yeah.
But also in my mind, this is the part that I know we've got some room to improve.
Yeah.
There's always room to improve.
Yeah. With that in mind, as we kind of wrap up, Clint, What's the dirtiest secret behind Big Jaw?
The dirtiest secret.
The dirtiest secret. Not like personally, but like, you know, like, yeah, there was this track where we just had an utterly ripped speaker cone on an amp, but it sounded cool and we kept it. You know, it just like that one down and dirty thing behind Apophenia that people may not know about whenever they listen to it.
Big Jaw, it's really like, it started in my mind. I started it in my mind when I was turning 30.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm turning 30, and I had spent like all my 20s in the studio recording other bands. And like realized like that's not what I set out to do. I started to learn how to make records to make my own records. Mm-hmm. And I was turning 30 and like realized I needed to like start doing that.
Yeah.
So Big Jaw is really a very solitary experience. Like making Big Jaw records, it's myself in a room, like just playing everything, writing everything one thing at a time.
Sure.
So I don't know if there's like a dirty secret of like, I wish it was like a beautiful, like Rolling Stones, like in the studio, everybody like a bunch of like camaraderie. That's what I wanted. Yeah. I wanted a band. I wanted a band that's like friends and like hanging out and like making records. It's not that yet.
Well, I really think that comes along.
I'd like it to be, but, I don't like dirty secret. Oh, man. I don't know. I've never really.
That may be in and of itself the dirtiest secret of all.
It's just kind
of
me.
Is that like it's
doing it?
Yeah, that like it's the Clint show with some people stepping in on musician.
It's me as an old ass man just trying to figure it out.
Old ass man, yeah.
Me just trying to like trying to
cue the laugh track.
It's me just trying to like me trying to make my mark. That's the whole thing. It's But it's, you know, it is a very solitary process.
Yeah.
Even though I had this co-producer, and even that was like an hour FaceTime once a week.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm kind of a solitary person. I do kind of thrive on like solitude.
Yeah.
You know, I love being around people, but I also need my
space. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I'm a nester.
Yeah.
As you can see, like... Yeah. If there's somewhere that's been built for the muse,
yes,
this is the space.
That's right.
Like
I love,
this.
I love people. I love being around people, but I also, I have to have. I'm one of those people that needs a pretty decent amount of alone time.
Yeah,
and you know, that's these records. That's what comes out of that.
And some beauty comes out of that, like the arrangement, the composition. That has come out of that solitude is absolutely amazing.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man.
The sound of it is phenomenally huge.
Thank you.
And just impeccable. The stuff that I have heard online, I can't wait now that I have an actual copy of the album
Let me say that. Like, listening online is not as great as hearing it. If you download it from our Bandcamp page, you can download high quality audio.
Yeah,
because it is like, I did a gig at Texas Motor Speedway, and we had the QSC line array out there. And I was like, you know what? I was in charge of the playlist. Let me put some Big Jaw on there. This was like right when I was finishing up Apophenia, and I put Mess Around on it. I was like, ugh, it did not stack up. I played it off the Bandcamp. Like, ugh. Because it was streaming. All the other stuff I had, like, I had on my phone.
Because it's just bit crushed.
But it was bit crushed. But then I went to my Dropbox and went to the actual file, and it was clear and crisp. And it was night and day, the difference.
It's like people that tell me, like, oh, we're recording this in 4K, right? Because it's going up on YouTube. Yeah, okay. Yeah, like, we could record an SD, and it wouldn't matter because it's going up on YouTube.
But
it's going to be crushed.
Let me say, like, all these songs... On Apophenia and Fort Fun both, you can hear them all on Spotify. You can hear them on Apple Music. You can hear them on Amazon. Wherever you stream stuff. If you like the songs, buy a CD or go to our Bandcamp page and buy it there and download a high-quality file because it is night and day.
Yeah, the AAC file
sound quality is different. Yeah. sound quality is night and day. Because it, you know, I put a lot into recording and mixing these EPs, and Apophenia and Fort Fun both were mastered on half inch two track. And you know, we put a lot into the sound quality of it. And when you stream it, you don't hear it.
No.
It sounds muddy. It sounds shitty. It sounds fine. It's fine. You can hear the song. If you're just into the songs, you don't care about sound quality, that's fine.
As
but
oddly enough, audio, most really good analog does sound that way.
What?
Like whenever you stream it.
Yeah.
Most stuff that's been like mastered down or even bounced off of analog back to digital, it's lost when it's streamed.
Yeah.
The bandwidth just is not there.
If you're into sound quality, if you're into like hearing things how they should be, stream it. If you like the songs,
download it.
Download it.
Buy a high quality version. Buy a CD copy.
I'm even willing to say, like, if you like the songs and you're not willing to pay for the, like, email me and I'll just send them to you. That's how much I want you to hear the difference.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I'm serious. You know, I would love it if, if you bought it.
Please, buy it. Buy
so we can like, do another one. But also, I want you to hear, if you like the songs, I want you to hear the difference between like streaming it and the actual files that we put a lot of work into making them sound dope.
All right. I love it. I love it.
I love
here's,
it. Too.
Here's the thing. Here's... Let's make a deal here, Clint.
Yeah.
If people take a screenshot, what is an email that they could get in touch with you at to do this?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm dead serious. If you want me to send these files to you for free, I will. BigJaw@BigJawBand.com.
There you go. BigJaw@BigJawBand.com. Take a screenshot on your phone, something like that, of your purchase of the album. Send it to him and mention the podcast, and he'll send you a high quality download.
Yeah,
and you that way you can compare. You can A/B the two.
Bandcamp lets you download like FLAC files.
Yeah,
they let you download like whatever file type you want. Yeah,
whatever file type you put up.
Yeah,
they'll let you download.
We did. It's all like, so we mastered. Chris Haynes mastered it on half inch two track, and then it's all. But we. Everything was recorded at 96K, and then it was, you know, when we mastered it and put it, made it digital files, it's all 96K. So it's all super hi-fi.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would love for you to hear it.
Yeah.
Super hi-fi.
So make sure to go through that effort, folks. Go out, buy your copy of Apophenia by Big Jaw. You can find it, like he said, just go to Bandcamp.
BigJaw.Bandcamp.com.
There you go. BigJawBand.com.
BigJawBand.com is our website.
Yeah.
You can stream everything at BigJaw.Bandcamp.com. We do have, you can buy our CD at BigJaw.Bandcamp.com. That's all in our merch page.
All right.
Yeah. Follow us on Instagram at BigJawBand.
Yeah.
All that helps. All that helps. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't think people understand that
how much that
following
helps.
Someone on Facebook, following a band on Facebook or following a band on Instagram in this day and age, that's so many bands. South by Southwest.
You may as well be buying a ticket to every show, folks.
To qualify,
that's what they're looking at.
To qualify, to even have them like look at your stuff, you have to have a minimum number of followers.
Yeah, I'm sure it's easily 5,000 followers. Like you gotta have at least the maximum.
Easily, yeah.
That's allowed for
so all that
a non-professional
stuff,
page.
Even if you don't buy something from a band, I'm not even talking my band.
Yeah.
Just bands. This is information that people don't know. Bands in general. If there's a band that you like, follow them.
Yes.
Follow them on Facebook.
Amen.
Follow them on every spot. Instagram, Facebook, wherever you can find
and
them.
Bands.
If
like,
you
I,
like them, follow
I,
them.
I'll admit it. I'm not even making myself available to all generations. No disassembling on Instagram. You know,
yeah, because when you try to book a show, that's the
they're looking
first,
for it.
That is the first thing that bookers look at.
That's it.
They look that's at it. How many followers you have.
And I can tell you folks, not only as a former booker and promoter for shows, but as someone that runs a podcast network, like I get the questions about talking sound. Like, I've asked people, like, the lead singer for the Oak Ridge Boys. I may have him on
the
here
Oak Ridge
one
Boys?
Day. Dude, I'm a huge Oak Ridge Boys fan. Yeah.
You know, like... Like, that was all right. That wasn't bad.
Yeah. Like, I'm a huge Oak Ridge Boys fan. And I saw that Silver, they were doing
buddy.
Like a
Silver Away, my friend.
They were doing like a Christmas gospel album or something. And yeah. The lead singer is one of my connections on LinkedIn.
No shit.
And I was like, dope, dude. I'd love for you to come on and promote
a
the new album
of me singing Elvira when I was
dope.
Like 10 years old.
Nice. Yep. Somewhere I have a picture of me at 6 years old dressed up as Peter Criss Halloween, like white makeup. Cat whiskers, aluminum foil on the rubber nice. Boots. Like, I want it blown up as a poster. That's what I want.
Yeah, I want that poster too.
Yeah. Soon in our merch page. But it was funny for me to be like, hey, I'd love you to come on and talk about, like, your years of doing this music that has meant so much to so many people and what you're doing with it now. And the first question was like, oh, I don't know, how many listeners do you have?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how many people are asking you to come on and promote your new gospel album, dude.
Yeah.
Like, that's not even what you did for half the time. It's what you're doing now. How many people are asking you to come on and promote that?
Yeah.
Because I don't see you, like, promoting a lot of appearances for it. Just saying. So it's odd to me. And the thing is that these profiles have popped up. With some of our shows simply because of the follows that we have and because of the shameless self-promotion that we do, like Dudes and Beer, whenever I'm like, hey, international author, come on my show, they go on my page and they see other international authors. They also see, like, posts with 1,000+ views, stuff like that, because I'm out there shamelessly self-promoting it. So like I said,
what you have to do now, right?
Go online, unless you're willing to, there's one of two options. You can do it yourself and learn how to do it, or you can dump tons of money on somebody that knows how.
Who? But
if you've got the money, dump it.
Tons of money.
If you've got the money, dump it, people.
The internet is
free. If not, the internet is free. All it takes is time to learn.
I just moved out, like, so that's me, like, trying to figure out how I can keep making music, how I can keep making these records, while I'm figuring out how to get people to listen to them and hear them. I just moved out way out into the country.
Oh yeah,
it was so far in the country that I don't have internet access.
Yeah,
I have, like, I called Time Warner or whatever, and they're like, oh yeah, no, we don't come out there.
Yeah, no.
So I've been like a hotspot, or I go to Austin. There's an Austin Java out there. I go to Austin Java. And
yeah, yeah.
That's what I did this morning.
Go and sit for an hour and a half so that you can get your emails done and stuff like that. And yeah, there are things out there that you can do for $100 or so a month. And we can talk about those.
I also don't have air. I don't have trash service.
Yeah.
So I probably shouldn't be saying this. I also dump all my trash at Austin Java.
Austin Java, you're one stop.
Yeah. If I say hashtag Austin Java, are they going to tag in? Like, they'd be watching out for me to dump when I'm dumping my trash in their dumpster.
Only if they can identify you. So
I'm painting. I feel like I'm painting a picture of myself right now.
You are painting a perfect picture of a musician.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Like, okay, I just moved into this house, way out in the sticks. But I have a year lease, and this next year, this is my commitment to this next year. I'm like, to make the best music I've ever made.
Yep.
To make the best art I've ever made. This next year, from, like, I just moved in. I just bought a bed today.
Nice.
I don't own a bed. I've been sleeping on an air mattress for the past couple weeks. But also painting a picture. But this next year, from September 2019 to September 2020, I'm focused.
Yep.
I'm going to be making.
What are your three goals?
My three goals?
What are your three goals? Because I'm a big believer that everybody needs at least three goals to fulfill every year, once a quarter.
And that's going back to, like, all the emails and all that stuff. Like, all that stuff, I'll do my best. My mind doesn't work that way. I'm not, like, the office, like,
No, organized. You need to surround yourself with someone that is that person.
I'm not
that's all.
Organized like that. My brain doesn't work that way. My brain is like, I want to make art.
Yeah.
I want to make music. and all that other stuff like takes away from that, but I know it's important and necessary. So I allocate so much to that.
Yeah.
And I know that that hurts me because I know it's not, you know, it's keeping me from getting to the next level where I can maybe find someone to take care of that stuff. But at the same time, all of my goals are art based for the next year. I know that I know I need to step away from that for a second and make some practical goals, make some promotion goals. But yeah, like this next year, I want to have two releases in this show, two EPs.
Awesome.
In this next year.
Awesome.
And I don't know if I want to announce this now because I might change my mind, but these releases, like, you know, I'll have an idea and then it'll grow and expand and change and twist and turn from there. But my first thought for this next EP is I want to make a dance record.
Oh, nice.
I want to make, and you know, not like, you know, not EDM or any of that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But I want every song, I want to make it feel like, you know, I want every song to make you feel like you want to move.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, like, not.
Yeah.
Every song has to make you feel like you want to move. That's my goal for the next EP.
All right.
Every song.
That's an honorable goal.
Yeah. No, like, sensitive stuff. No.
Yeah.
I want
no
to
broody
have,
action.
No. None of that.
Yeah.
And I might change that as it goes on, but that's my initial impetus for this next record is I want to make songs that make you move.
Yeah.
That's my goal for the next record.
That's awesome.
That's the only goal I have right now.
I love it.
That will get more refined and think other goals will pop up around that, but that's all that's in my mind right now.
Yeah.
For starting this next project.
Yeah.
Which I'm in the middle of starting right
now. Well, and the whole reason I bring it up, Clint, is because it's important, like I said, to have those markers.
Yeah.
Even to say, like, 3 months from now, I will have the album scoped out.
Yeah. Well, that's even,
This is how I want it to move. These are the three movements between the five songs.
So having Chris Haynes involved, and we haven't talked about the next record yet, but just that much of it where it's like, I want to have a record. So, like, my favorite song to play live is a song that I wrote specifically to have a song that's fun to play live. And it worked out that way.
Nice.
It's on Fort Fun. It's called Tell Me What I Want to Hear.
Okay.
And it's we usually close with it. And it's a fun-ass fucking song to play live. And I set out to have that song to be a live, fun song. And it turned out that way. Which is kind of a nice thing. But I kind of want a whole record of that.
Yeah. No, I myself.
But I told Chris, so I was like, I want a record where I can, every song is a dance. And he's like, okay, so this record is going to have to be different than the other records that you've done in the way that, like, that I've approached starting the songs. Where every other song, every other record, like, I haven't had a plan. I go in and like I have a space and just like whatever happens, I'm going to make something out of the space.
Yep.
So this next record, he's like, you have to think about it more. You have to think, you have to have kind of a game plan. You have to have like a little bit more of a structure in mind.
Yeah.
So
like I said, actually sitting down and graphing an album out
rather than
saying,
like me sitting down,
it's going to move from here to here. Yeah. And it,
every five record,
song EP, this is where it moves from place to place.
All four records from the beginning to now have all started from me like picking up a guitar, fucking around, or sitting at the drums and fucking around, or picking up a bass and fucking around, or singing and fucking around, like, and see what happens. This next one is going to be like me sitting down. I want a song to do this.
Yeah.
And how can I get there?
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really interesting process for me to like start with a goal like that. Tell me what I want to hear. It had that goal and I went about it a little bit different way, but just sitting down before I pick up any instrument and kind of like having the broad goal in mind. Goddamn scotch. I feel that scotch right now.
No, it's definitely the fact of, like you said, having the broad goal, having it scoped out as far as what you want it to be beforehand.
Different experience for me.
You know, and there's definitely the concept. I'm very much a whenever I hit record and hit play, I just listen.
Yeah.
I just listen when I record. My music operates in a different type of music typically. So I was taught very much to, because I don't know music theory, things like that. I was taught to compose kind of like a bar graph. Like if you look at an editing screen and you see like, oh, here's this little chunklet and there's that one and there's that. That's how I was taught to compose.
Yeah.
Was like, this is the emotion I'm trying to get across. These are the sounds I'm going to use. This is the duration of that sound. This one fades into that, goes here, goes there.
Well, that's my other handicap is that I don't know shit about music.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm mostly self-taught.
Yep.
I don't understand theory. I don't know. Like, the past year, I've really, like, worked really hard at learning the names of the notes on my fretboard.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It is huge.
That is huge.
It's a big difference.
Yeah.
So trying.
I'm exactly the same way. Yeah. And when it came time for arrangement composition class, it was one of those that my arrangement and comp teacher would see what I had written on paper and listen to what was going on and go, okay, well, this chord structure is entirely too complex. Like, I can see what you were trying to notate and you didn't quite notate it right.
Oh, you can write? You write?
Yeah. given enough time, I can look at a staff and write down what the notes are, but that's literally like a long transcription process. And that's why she taught me the means of composition that I know. Because she was like, what you're doing sounds cool. And it sounds awesome and dissonant, and I'm with it. You just don't know how to notate that 10-finger chord. There's a way to notate it. It's just way too complex for you to do. So I'm going to teach you this means of composition so you can do what you're wanting, what you hear in your head without it tripping in the way of musical theory. And it was interesting. It was very much more learning to arrange, compose, and engineer with the concept of sound as a whole than it was as like melody and harmony.
Was that college or
a little bit? Yeah. Cool. I spent about a year doing recording engineering before a professor grabbed me and was like, listen, man, what you're doing on a four track at home is what most people will be doing with the multi-track when they leave. You need to go out and meet people. You need to learn who to meet, where to meet them, where to roll cables so that you meet the right people. You just need to get out and get your hands dirty.
I mean, that's the most important thing of all. Knowing how to roll cables.
It's
because if you don't know how to wrap a cable,
nobody respects you.
Exactly.
Nobody. Your gardener will respect you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's about it. Because they roll cables the same way. And
California roll
right over the elbow. Nothing but figure eights.
What do you call that? What do you call that when you do thumb and elbow? The thumb and elbow.
I call it wrong.
That? I heard someone call it that, a California wrap.
I've heard California wrap because it's just lazy and fast. I've heard gardener roll.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because that's how people, or contractor roll. Because
that's
how
like
they roll up their extension cords.
No, to wrap cables, too.
Yeah, I mean, most people.
I don't know why people called it that.
Because it kind of like the California stop. It's kind of
like,
you know, like, I'm going to kind of stop, but not really.
I did a gig in San Antonio. ended up being kind of a nightmare gig, not a big job, like an AV gig.
Yeah.
And it took me over a year to get paid.
Oh, I've had those.
Yeah, and it was like I had to like, it was a whole big thing. The guy threatened to sue me.
We have episodes about this.
You do?
We do. We do. We have episodes on how to collect your money.
Like, I felt like I called so many people. I felt like I was a detective. I had called this guy.
Hey, man, I had one recently where I went out and helped a buddy. I was telling you before the show, other than corporate AV, I don't do a whole lot of rock and roll anymore. And a buddy of mine was
this is corporate.
I know. And it's pretty rare that you get stiffed on them. But I had one where I went out and helped a buddy of mine's band. I am not by any means, like, you sit me down at an 84 input analog console, I'll wreck that shit all day long. Mm-hmm. Get me on a 12 channel digital board, and I'm like, so I've got like 6 hours to figure out the patch bays, right? Yeah, right? And like how it routes around. I'm definitely not like in the corporate realm, sure, but in rock and roll where it's like, let me throw some reverb and delay on the snare drum. Like, yeah. I'm just not like I was with analog stuff where it's like, okay, auxiliary, bringing it back in, patching it, you know.
Corporate though, man.
I can, like, do that all day long.
It's usually pretty simple.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you, well, and out, you've got all day long to dial in your sound system and to figure out your 12 inputs and to copy and paste them because you're using the same mic elements.
Right.
You know, you don't have that in rock and roll with 5 stages or 10 bands in a day. Yeah. You just don't have that time. It's scramble and know how to use your stuff. And for me, it was just funky. And at the end of the night, okay, and, you know, I figured, hey, I'm there. I've got my cables. I've got my mics. I'm helping my buddy out. Stuff like, I'm going to be getting my cash at the end of the night. Yeah, no, it came up to like, so, yeah, I can PayPal you on Monday, right?
Oh,
and it was like, oh, you're so lucky I'm here helping my buddy. And that I love him so much. Because otherwise you would get these 4 knuckles across the face.
Well, this show, the guy that took me like over a year, and it was like, I had to keep pressing and pressing.
It's rough.
But on the strike on that show was kind of like the first kind of red flag where the like half the guys they hired for the strike, they hired from Craigslist.
Oh,
yeah. And we're watching just dudes like telling really rough stories and doing the over the thumb, over the shoulder wrapping all the cables. Like, hey, man, like,
you're going to destroy that cable. Please stop. Yeah, please stop.
Can I show you how to?
I'm not even going to teach you over under, just a quarter twist.
Exactly.
Just a quarter twist.
But it was like watching a bunch of dudes just like,
yeah,
doing whatever they wanted. Mm. It's like, okay, this is not a pro.
Well, crew. and it's definitely one of those. Even as a musician, folks, I'm here to tell you, I have a whole series of articles that's getting ready to be ported over from Austin Hot Mods to Talking Sound for this reason. And it's all like, what's that thing called?
Yeah.
And it's like, what's that thing? The gain knob. You want to know why your guitar's always screeching? It's because you're turning down the gain and turning up the volume. That's be surprised how low you could keep your volume and get that sound if you crank the gain, turn the volume down.
Let me say that.
That's what it's there for.
As an engineer, as like an AV guy, as a whatever, if you are getting into recording, if you're getting into AV, if you're getting into guitar or anything, don't be afraid to admit what you don't know.
That's right.
Because if you ask somebody, the longer you wait to ask somebody what you don't know, the more embarrassed you're going to be to ask it down the road. How's that work? Ask somebody.
The harder it's going to be to get out of that hole.
Oh, yeah. People will love to tell you, to share their information.
Yep.
Like 99% of the time, most guys and gals out there are happy to, because they would love to be on a crew with people who know what's up.
Yeah.
And they will, they would love to tell you how to do it right.
Yeah. Like I said, I start.
There's no shame in asking.
You got to learn. I started this whole podcast with that concept in mind.
That's all you got to learn.
This whole podcast.
That's how you learn. Oh, what's this? I don't know what that is.
Yep.
Not pretend. I'm not going to pretend how I know how to do this. I'm going to ask.
Another in that series.
And then when those people you ask are going to be impressed that you asked.
That's right.
And they're going to know that.
Not just that. They're going to respect you more
and
that you asked.
They're going to respect that you asked, and they're going to know that you know
that's
it.
Right.
And so down the road, when there's a gig coming up, who are they going to call?
Yeah.
Or when there's
the crowd of people and 8 of them are on audio call, they're going to be like, you, stick next to me.
That girl.
Clint, come here, man.
Exactly.
Because I know you know your business.
That's how you learn is there are people that know it.
Ask them.
And you ask them.
Nobody likes to talk about anything. Like,
yeah.
Anybody will talk about themselves.
You don't know how to do it. You ask them.
Ask them.
That's it.
That's
don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to ask.
That's just it.
Unless you are hired as the top of the totem pole.
Yeah.
If you ask, then you might be in
then
trouble.
Then there's gentle. And we'll get into that. One of the adjuncts that we're getting ready to start is the professional confessional.
Yeah.
where it's situations like that. Yeah. Like, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with showing up on site and it's a video mixer that you haven't used?
Yeah.
You're a V1, but hey, here's a mixer I haven't laid eyes on in 6 years. Like, I hired a video guy for a show and he showed up and called me and was like,
what is your take on that? I feel like if I'm hired in a position, I'm pretty upfront with the companies that hire me, of my skill level and what I know and what things I don't know.
Core competencies.
And if I show up and there's something that if I feel like I can figure it out, I'll figure it out. If I feel like this is beyond me, I don't hesitate to say, hey.
Yeah. Well, number one, always try to get a hold of PMs, project managers, things like that.
Because the most important thing is like,
find out what gear you're using.
Is whatever you got to do to make that show happen.
Hack it. Hack it. And that's what I told this V1 was like, hey, man. He was like, dude, I haven't seen this mixer in like 6 years. I'm like, that's okay. And he made a few mistakes. And one of the big mistakes, folks, is if you open up a strange piece of gear or like in this situation where the video mixer that was on call didn't work, so they went to the backup. The backup had been used on a previous show with the same inputs. So here was an input map. Why didn't you follow this map? Oh, well, I wanted to use these inputs. Okay, but this map worked last time. All the inputs worked. All the outputs worked. That's what they said, right? Yeah. Okay, well, why didn't you just use these connectors in line to get them to those inputs? Well, I wanted to use SDI, not DVI. Okay, but it worked this way. Just like they had a stage plot. Why didn't you just follow their plot? Like, that's cool if that's how you wire it. But here's the last way it worked. Did you try that? And he hadn't. Yeah. So it was one of those like, hey, man, just follow what's there. Ask the question. Do you guys have an input map from the last show you'll use this on? And you'd be surprised. Frequently, they might. And at that point, it's nothing more than a Google hop, skip, and a jump away to download the manual, find out anything else you need to know. Yeah. But preemptive knowledge is a plus. We frequently don't get that in the field that we work in. They're like, I don't know, it's a digital console. And you show up, and it's like a Yamaha QL, and you've never run a QL.
Most of those are like,
it's wash, rinse, repeat. It's just, it's in a different menu. Things.
A lot of stuff you can find online.
Yeah.
There are some weird, like, some digital consoles have some weird proprietary things.
They do.
And a lot of times, like, like PS has like all the Soundcraft stuff. Yeah. And I've showed up at PS jobs before, and there's like the stage boxes work in a kind of a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing they've said, like, hey, I don't know if you use these boards before, but you have to like do this in the input section to get the stage box work. They'll, let you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Really, and being upfront with that, especially if you step on property, my big one is always asking people, do you have any squirrely channels? Do you have any issues? Do you have any known issues in house?
Right.
That kind of stuff. So, with that in mind, Clint, thank you so much. I always find it funny when people are worried about a show and then it goes this long because it's just a natural conversation.
Oh, was I worried about
the
show?
That's what it is. It was like, I don't know what we're going to talk about. And it's like, we're going to talk about your music.
Worried about like any conversation coming up like, do I have anything to say? Yeah. I don't know if I have anything to say.
Oh, man, you have tons to say. Well, I've never found us lack.
Five glasses of scotch.
A little lubrication helps, but I've never honestly found the fact that we can't have a natural conversation on site about things exactly like what we've just talked about.
Oh, we could talk about and stuff. We could probably do this for 12 hours.
We could. Next time I'm doing a 12-hour marathon, I will call you.
Yeah.
There will be many bottles of scotch involved.
You know what would be a fun one would be like you and me. And like Jason Antoon.
Ooh.
And James Shealy.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty fun.
That would be cool. Just talking about like the generalities of production, Like I said,
yeah, I haven't been doing AV that long. I've only been doing AV for a couple years.
I know.
So I have the kind of like the newbie. I've been an audio engineer, a recording engineer for 20 years.
Yeah.
But like the AV thing is a different
animal
altogether.
It's a whole different world.
And I didn't get into that till I moved to Austin. What, do you know Brendan Ryan? Do you know that guy? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brendan, who was like, oh, you know audio, you could do this. Like, I think Brendan did front of house for Waylon for a long time.
Yep.
But Brendan got me into. He's like, oh yeah, I'll hook you up. But it's a different world, man.
It is. It is. It's a different world of expectation. It's a different use of the same gear.
Yeah.
Like, night and day use. Yes.
So I'm, you know, for AV, I feel like I'm still kind of a novice AV.
You've definitely grasped the concept.
I understand the concept. Understand the concept that it is mostly customer service.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a lot of jobs.
It is.
And that's a lot of technical jobs are customer service, and that's the aspect that a lot of people overlook.
Clint, even playing music on stage is customer service.
Absolutely.
It's nothing but if you can't read your audience that, hey, I know this song's in the set list, but that is not where this crowd is right now. And if you can't change that on the fly, you're going to have a tough problem. And it is reading a crowd. It's learning to read those little cues.
So many songs,
it's learning to, just like with a client, go like, they're really not feeling comfortable right now, and I can feel that from 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And you can. If you tune into that, it's no different than feeling that on stage where it's like, wow, the drummer's really not feeling that mix right now.
Yeah.
And I can just tell by how he's playing.
Yep.
So thank you so much for coming on, taking
the
time to talk
about
Apophenia, Big Draw, everything, man. Yeah, everything. Yeah. You're welcome to come on anytime and chat. So
let me know. I'm around.
Absolutely.
I don't know shit to do.
Once again, tell everybody.
You want to share this delicious scotch with me and get me drunk.
My tenure is yours, buddy.
What is this?
That is Spayburn. That is Spayburn tenure.
Okay. It was very smooth.
Yeah. Big fan of it.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Affordable, affordable scotch, folks. Literally about $30 a bottle.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in the Dirt Diggers section, that's actually really amazing. It's good stuff.
Yeah, that's
good. For the price.
That's smooth, not harsh.
No, it's
Spayburn.
It's nice. Spayburn. Spayburn. I tend to go to the 10-year. That's about $4 more a bottle.
Yeah, but that's worth it.
Yeah.
With that $4.
Way worth. So while you're online, everybody, tell them where they can go on. Check out the music of Big Jaw. Buy the album Apophenia, where they can go to get merch. Last chance for shameless self-promotion.
So all of our merch, we have t-shirts, we have stickers, we have, if you buy a t-shirt or a CD, I always throw in stickers, bigjaw.bandcamp.com. If you want our like glossy email or a website that we send out to whatever, it's a bigjawband.com.
Bigjawband. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Bigjawband.com. I believe that's our website. We are on Spotify. We are on Apple Music. We are on wherever you find music, you will find us. And I'm serious. God damn it, scotch. I'm serious, though. If you listen to our music on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you listen to, wherever you stream it, and you want to hear the full quality audio, I will send it to you for free. Email me, bigjaw@bigjawband.com.
And mention the Talking Sound podcast to make sure to get your free high-end download.
Yes, I will send it to you.
Yeah.
If you feel inclined, if you love it that much and you want to pay for it, you can download it at bigjaw.bandcamp.com, and you can pick what kind of file quality, sound quality you like.
Just go buy it.
If you like it and you don't have the dough, I will send it to you.
There you have it.
A gift from me.
There you have it. Clint, thank you so much, Chris, for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me, bud.
While you're online, checking out all the great music, all the great merch from Big Jaw Band, make sure to go on to audibletrial.com/talking sound. That is where you can get your free 30-day trial of Amazon's Audible. Tons of great books, tons of great information there. Go on, check it out. 30 days free. audibletrial.com/talking sound. talkingsoundpodcast.com, talkingsoundshow.com is where you can find all of the episodes where you can find the freelance AV directory, all kinds of stuff. Go online, check it out there. As we go out, here's some more of the great track Mess Around off the album Apophenia by Big John. Till next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of your hearing, and remember, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.